Anyone want to share their own words? Just come up to the mic. Yeah.
One of the things you touched on, and it's one I hit a lot, is there's still some confusion for at least folks that have asked me questions in passing about transgender as opposed to LGMB. Mm-hmm. And so they'll be like, they'll walk up, so it's like, is Asher going to like girls now? And I'm like, Asher's going to like whoever Asher likes. I was like, one thing I want to make clear for them is like, identity is this. It's who he is. It's not who he likes. He'll figure out who he likes later. Right now, he's working through who he's going to be on this planet. It's identity first, attraction second. And if you ask Ash, he's like, I'm going to like whoever. He refers
pansexual.
Mm-hmm. Pan. He was like, might be boy, might be girl, might be transgender boy, might be transgender girl. It's going to be whoever I like is who I'm going to like. But the important thing I try to drive to like other parents is this is identity. You know, it seems for me anyway, it's parents that ask me this most. So is he going to like girls now? It's identity first. Identity, identity, identity. Get your kid through this identity path, and then worry about who they're going to like later. Because accepting them, and not to be melodramatic, accepting them can be the difference between you having that kid alive or you visiting a headstone.
And I think, you know, and let me just add this. I think the confusion sometimes comes with, let's look at the marketing. You know, when I was growing up, it was GLBT. I don't know if anybody remember that. And then they switched it around, and, you know, now it's LGBT. And, you know, and personally, I feel it's LGB equals T. That's just my preference, because I think that when we, you know, the L is for lesbian, that's an orientation. You know, G is for gay, that is an orientation. B is for bisexual, that is an orientation. But transgender is not an orientation. It is one's identity and lifestyle of who they are. And so, you know, and, you know, if we want to go back through it, a lesbian, generally we were taught, is two females, gay is two males, bisexual, you know, throw up a coin, toss it up, heads or tails, it's still gender connected to it. But in our transgender community, it's so fluid. So I think more education is needed, especially, and honestly, it's you're talking about the parents probably around our age or older, you know, because this young generation somehow, you know, seem to get it just a little bit, you know. But honestly, I think more education to understand what accomplished the T, and why are we connected to the LGBT? Are we just being plugged in? Can we not have our own? That was a question anybody can answer, but that's okay. But honestly, if you think about that, is like we're being just lumped in, you know, to this. And at the end of the day, I'm sorry, this is just my personal opinion, and I'm not trying to be biased or whatnot. But I still think if it's going to be us lumping the T in on my community, then I think we need to be at the front.
And Dylan, you had something else to add to that.
Yeah. So on the subject of LGBT and everything, so if you wanted to take a step higher, like this would be a 101, if you wanted to go into queer theory, I identify as queer for everything. My sexual orientation is queer. My identity is queer. When it comes to being, I consider myself a queer handyman. And so, you know, just that in itself is, it's different. You know, like if someone were to come up to me and talk to me, I'd say, well, I'm a transgender man. This is what it means. But if I'm in the community and we're like, hey, I'm queer, let's go out with my Daisy Dukes and my muscle shirt and let's go dancing, you know, that kind of thing. And so I would want to say, you know, like, be an adult, raise adults, have awareness, have respect, and let's navigate like that, you know. And so it is an identity, you know. Transgender is an identity, and you have gender identity, who you are, you have sexual orientation, who you want to be with, and then you have gender expression, how you present yourself, you know, what shirt are you going to put on, what shoes are you going to put on, how are you going to do your hair, how are you going to transition in the morning?
Claire?
Yeah, I I seem to be the resident grandmother on the panel. And generationally, these issues are understood very differently. I grew up in a time when there was like a unipurpose slam, which was faggot. So it really didn't matter whether you were trans, it didn't matter whether you were gay or bi, you got called a faggot. You know, nobody was interested in having us parse words to explain what, well, no, you have to have a, find a different dirty word for me because I actually am not. And there was a lot less information available. So sexuality was always very confusing to me. My first relationships were with boys that were older than I was, and I quite liked boys. The problem with it was that they insisted on thinking I was one, and that was focusing on all the wrong parts, so that didn't work. Girls, when I started dating girls, that was a little bit easier, and I think of myself, quite honestly, as demisexual, which is a term that not everybody has heard. You know, I kind of use pansexual slash demisexual because the truth of the matter is I never fell in love with a body part. I fell in love with people, and people had different parts. You know, I thought I was bisexual from the time that I was in high school. And then I met a trans woman and went, okay, well, bisexual plus one. And then I met a trans guy, and it was... He was like 20 years younger than I was, and he was gorgeous. he looked a little bit like a French impressionist painter with, you know, the beard and umbrella and baggy pants. So I really kind of ran the gamut, but I had to be alive in that time period to really find words to describe what I felt. Before that, it was just about attraction to a person. And that's what demisexual is. You are sexually attracted to people that you have an emotional relationship with. And that fits very well with the relationship that my wife and I have had for 25 years. You know, I am different. She actually figured out how to deal with me when... how many of y'all have watched Star Trek? Do any of y'all remember Dax? Dax was a symbiote that depending on what episode and what season, shows up in different bodies. So sometimes Dax is male and sometimes Dax is female, but it's always the same intelligence. So she figured I was just like Dax. It was still me, and it was just in a different body now. And that's the way that we kind of resolve those issues. But generationally, our understanding of these things were very, very different coming up in the 1960s, early 1970s. And I think when you talk to trans folks, you may run into those generational differences where we need to have a translation table to be able to convert what we experienced and the words we used to describe it into things that are commonly accessible now. So I just thought I'd toss that in to show my age.
You look beautiful.
Yes. Well, let's open things up for a few questions. I have some more to end with, but come on up to the mic, though. We want to make sure you're on tape. And if you would like to listen to this after or share it with your friends, it will be on a Views and Brews Extra. If you just search for that on iTunes or at KUT, at the KUT website, you can find it and you can share it like that.
Am I supposed to show everyone my rear end?
Yes.
Okay.
No. If you just, when you introduce yourself, just tell us your name.
I'm sorry, I'm very uncomfortable with microphones. But my name's Carol. I just really wanted to, I guess, add to this current topic. Speaking through past first versus present, my experience has been a member of the LGBT community for, I guess, 20 plus years as a lesbian. And speaking of the LGBT grouping, I experienced it as I'm a lesbian and we're all together under one big rainbow, because at least back 20-ish years ago, it was kind of funny. I feel like we were talking about the classes within the groups. I remember noting that it was odd to me that the bisexual community was somewhat almost considered to be like not belonging or dumb, because they couldn't get their minds made up right. You were either lesbian or you were gay, and then the trans element was always in there because we all needed to ride on the bus together to hopefully push ourselves in progress in politics, et cetera. So that was always kind of my understanding of why we were LGBT. And I was always identified as lesbian, but now, as my wife and I have a 6-year-old transgender daughter, I've always been thankful, or I'm now very thankful, that we are all on the bus together, and I feel like I'm approaching my middle age, and suddenly I feel like I'm very thankful to the bisexuals and the transgendered individuals for, I guess, the influence on the millennials and the new generation for actually being that kind of helping people no longer create that distinction of you have to be on this side of the coin or that side of the coin. Like, we can all just kind of be who we are here, and then the rest of it, we don't have to necessarily define ourselves. So I don't really know what I'm saying, but that was my thought on my experience with the LGBT grouping. Thank you. Thankful for it. Thank you.
Go ahead, Claire.
Again, from a perspective, you know, thinking back years ago, there were very few safe places, and there were a whole lot of places that weren't safe. Gay bars were always someplace that I felt safe. You know, it wasn't about the label, it was about acceptance. It was about the fact that nobody wanted to hurt me. So, you know, I think we came together out of necessity, and I think we stay together because it's still a big, mean world out there, and we still need all of us. So, just my thoughts.
Dylan? And
also, something to keep in mind as far as LGBT history goes, cross-dressing was illegal for a long time. And like in Houston, where I'm from, it was illegal until like about the 1983. And so in Texas, look up the queer history, it's amazing, but they use cross-dressing bans to raid gay bars. So there were a lot of gay spaces where you couldn't have people that were labeled as cross-dressers. And so, you know, then you have the Compton Cafeteria riot before the Stonewall riot, and the Compton Cafeteria was a place where transgender women could go because they weren't allowed in the gay bars because trans people in gay bars meant that the gay bars were going to be raided. And so we have to remember our history. We are together and we have to make this fight together, but it's because we've been on the other side for so long together. You know, gay and lesbian, everybody knows a gay and lesbian person. If you don't know, you've known someone in your past. But less than 10% of the population knows a transgender person. And so just that statistic alone makes that very other. Gay and lesbian people, not all of them, and some transgender people too, it's an easier way for assimilation to happen. You know, you're not struggling with housing necessarily, you're not struggling with the job necessarily, and so, you know, we have to remember we are all fighting together, and that's, you know, it's beautiful.
Another question?
Hi, my name is Joe. I am a cisgender ally. And yes, hello, for those of you I know. I have a 27-year-old transgender son. And the work that you are doing tonight makes his life easier, and I want to thank you each for doing that. It means a lot. I have a question for each of you, and Ken, for your child. And something that we talk about with our son is the torn feeling. On the one hand, he would love nothing better than to just live his life as Jeremy, as the man that he is. On the other hand, he's very aware of the need to do exactly what you're doing tonight with being open and raising awareness, because with that awareness will come the acceptance when more than just a few percentage of the people realize that they know someone transgender. And so I'm wondering what your journeys have been in terms of reaching the decision to be public and to share such very personal details. And I know that takes a lot of strength and courage, and I admire tremendously what you're doing. So I want to thank you, but I also would like to know how you came to the decision to do this. Thank you.
Ken, you want to start? You reached for your mic first, so there.
So I was kind of already into activism. You mind? Oh. So I was already, I'd already been in front of the camera. My wife had got diagnosed with MS back in 08. So yeah, we kind of have our plate full. And when she was diagnosed with MS, I got in the MS space, and through the amount of bike riding I do in that community, I started getting, they started wanting to put me in front of cameras to talk about MS and activism. So when Asher came along, as Asher, I think when it really started is when Melissa met Equality Texas. And then there was going to be a press conference, and they asked if I would talk. And probably what drives me is I still remember the day I told a coworker about Asher, and she was like, if there were more parents like you, which it still stuns me, this statement. She was like, if there were more parents like you, there'd be less headstones. And it didn't make sense to me. I could hear what she was saying, but it didn't make sense to me because for me, this is normal. I'm a parent. I have a kid. Support the kid. I'm to be his first ally, not his first bully. So as our circle got bigger and things progressed and opportunities came up to drive awareness, it's basically just breaking down ignorance, and ignorance is not stupidity, ignorance is not having knowledge. The less ignorance there is in the world, the better it will be for Asher long after I'm gone.
Anyone else want to speak to that? Carmarian?
You know, so I started this journey, like you heard earlier, but there is an example that really ignites the passion that I have to speak out my truth, and especially for a community that's still gaining their own individual voices. Years ago, we lost someone in the community who happened to be trans-identified. And this was a trans person of color. This individual was Black. And in our culture, spirituality is very important. So we're going to go the whole nine yards and do the whole funeral. You know, when we keep the body for about 3.5 weeks to 4 weeks till we figure out, you know, what the service is going to look like. And then when we go in, you know, we actually have church. We forget that the body is actually there and it's their memorial service. And that's part of our culture. But then we wait until the minister, whoever is providing the eulogy, to get up to give us comforting words. And I was at that funeral, and that that individual did not provide comforting words. It provided a hate message, misgendered, and everybody that was apparently supposed to be attached to that lifestyle, you know, this is your opportunity so you won't be stretched out here and me preaching your memorial service the next Saturday. And the family was devastated, so they reached out to the ministry at the time. I think I was there maybe less than 2 years. If we can redo a memorial service in honor of that individual. And I was chose to actually expedite the service. And we did what we said we were gonna do is respect. And I didn't even know much about that individual. And but because we were able to provide an inclusive opportunity for people to mourn and for people to have an atmosphere that was inviting, at that point, two things, I said that I will always respect, no matter where I am, and I'm going to respect if you know, because we have to understand transition don't just start on the outside. It starts mental, and you may not have transition on the outside, but if you tell me by golly that you want to be the opposite of what I want to see, I'm going to respect that, because I need to honor that. After that particular incident, and my family still knows this, I don't know if they will honor it, but this day now, I never want to have a funeral when I leave. There is no reason. Every day, every moment I leave the house, I preach my own eulogy. and I want you just to create me, create to either give my body to the state, collect your $250. I don't know if you guys know that you can do that. Collect your $250. Go live, take the life insurance policy because, you know, when I transitioned, my parents increased my policy times three. So take that, go, you know, go celebrate in my memory, create, you know, just do whatever. Just respect me. And I think that's the key thing is that respect would take us a lot farther. And had we just respect individuals, even in the time we're living now, we're not even talking about politics and what that's going to translate to us being trans-identified. But respect on the forefront, I think, is what is going to keep us unified, and we will see some production down the in the future. But as long as we are not respecting individuals, then I think, therefore, we're going to have a lot further to go, and then it's going to hurt the next generation.
Claire, what about you?
You know, I think it's, again, I come from a little different time. Being trans, the only safety you had was to hide or to pass. There was no question of being openly trans. Christine Jorgensen came out in 1953, 4 years before I was born. And then it was like trans people disappeared until Renee Richards. And you were either a celebrity or you didn't exist. I've never been brave. I spent my entire life hiding. As I got closer to transition, though, I had to make some hard choices. There was a time when, before a doctor would assist you, you had to leave your job. If you were in a family, you had to divorce your spouse, give up your rights to your children, move to a new city, and start over as a new person. You had to find employment and live in your gender for 2 years before they would even begin treatment. And for a long time, the way that one became trans was you simply disappeared one day and showed up somewhere else as a new person. That's what happened to Lynn Conway. My problem was I had a lifetime of relationships. I had been a son, a husband, a brother, and those were important relationships. I couldn't wipe out my past without dishonoring those relationships. You know, I couldn't really simply cease to exist and continue to live with the people that I loved. But if I was going to claim my own past, that meant I had to learn how to accept the fact that I would be open. And in doing that, I decided if I was going to be open, I was going to be a firebrand. I'd spent an awful lot of time in the public eye with my career. I had been there. It always terrified me because I was always convinced if I stood up in front of a room full of people and called attention to myself that one of them would see through me and stand up and point their finger and say, "She's a girl." Never happened. But the first time I was asked to do public speaking after I started presenting openly, I almost had a panic attack. But that's what I do now. I do it because being visible, being open, is the most effective form of advocacy. They had done a survey, Williams Institute had done a survey, and they said that people who knew or worked with someone who was transgender, 66% of them believe that transgender people should have rights and acceptance. Because I meet people who don't know what trans is and their hearts change. Because by just being there, I normalize people's notion of what transgender means. So it's not for everyone. And quite honestly, I think people need to look at their safety first. If it's not safe for you in your circumstances to be open, you shouldn't feel like you owe it to anyone to be out. If you choose to be out, stand with us. We'll do our best to protect you.
Dylan, what about you?
So I experienced discrimination really hard, and it really was like a slap in the face. I didn't see it coming, and I, you know, was suddenly left without a career path. And so I turned to my community, and at the time there was nothing that anybody could point me to. I'm like, what's there for me? What resources are there for me? And I couldn't find anything. And so I was lucky enough to be in Houston, where it was just, you know, we had a transgender center, and I was able to find community there. And I was able to find a place to belong. But what I always tell people whenever they're questioning, whenever they're thinking about transitioning, you don't have to be out. If you're listening to this and you're thinking about coming out but you don't feel safe, wait. I promise you that you are loved. I promise you that every decision you make is going to be amazing, and it's okay to do it on your time. And there's nothing wrong with considering your safety. There's nothing wrong with considering gainful employment. There's nothing wrong with considering housing. When it's your time, I promise we're going to be there. And there's a big community out there for you. And we're there with you now. We've all been there. But make sure that you weigh the options. Make sure that you think about those things. I didn't, you know, I had a meeting with an ACLU lawyer after I experienced my discrimination. And I didn't know to go there until it was past the time that you could file a complaint. And when I was speaking with her, she said, you know, well, aren't you worried about your safety? I didn't even think about my safety. I didn't even think that, you know, we could be picking up pipe that weighed 27 pounds per foot and someone could choose to let a hoist go on top of me. Those aren't the things that I thought about. I thought about being happy, and I thought about being who I am. But we have to think about our safety. And we need you. You know, this is a metaphorical war. You know, we are at war. We need troops everywhere. We need medics. We don't just need infantry. We need people to take care of our infrastructure. We need people to build future advocates. It's a marathon, it's not a race. And so we need everyone to take their time and to make the decisions that are best for them. We're working hard. Here's four people working really hard. There's an audience, if you're listening, there's an audience in here, and everybody is working really hard to gain tools and skills to make this world better for you. But until that you feel that it's your time, it's okay to wait. And we love you.
Thank you. Another question?
Is it Bob? Yeah. Hello, my name is Holt Lackey, and as a straight cisgendered ally, I just want to thank all of y'all for coming out here tonight and educating the listeners, everybody in this room. We truly appreciate it. I hate to ask what is a relatively prosaic question having to do, as it does, with current events. But one of the more topical issues that is on everybody's mind when it comes to the transgender community is the effort by some Texas politicians to force transgender Texans to use the bathroom that was assigned according to the sex that was assigned to them at birth rather than their identity. And I'd just like to hear from the panel about the practical issues involved in that, the safety issues involved in that, the dignity issues involved in that, and what it means to the community, to all of our community, as people who believe that we're all created equal, and specifically to the transgender community, when those messages and those agendas dominate the policy-making bodies of the state.
Dylan, you want to take that on first?
Yeah, so great question, because it's so common. And I come from Houston, where we recently had an equal rights ordinance get shut down by the Houston Area Preachers Council and the Texas Area Preachers Council. And Dave Welch, one of the leaders of the Houston Area Preachers Council, he is, I would say that these arguments are hate speech. It's misinformation. It's demonizing a community that doesn't have the numbers to protect themselves. It's a conversation that's never led by us. And it is merely a fear tactic for some weird political gain. I know that for myself, I use the men's room. You know, those of you that can see me right now, I don't think you would imagine me going into the women's room. I'll tell you when the option's there, I use the single stall unisex bathroom just because that's my own personal comfort. But I mean, if you want to know where I number one and number two, it's in the toilet. And as a plumber, I can tell you that toilets are not gendered. They're going to accept your waste no matter how you want to give it to them. And so I would like to say something interesting about the bathroom discussion is a lot of people, a lot of individuals, conversations about gender end in elementary school. When boys go here, girls go there, that's where you go to use the bathroom and wash your hands. And so I think that when you re-stir this conversation that ended in elementary for most adults, I think that their conversation, their mental process goes right back there. You know, that's where the memory is triggered. And so it goes back to, well, I was taught in second grade that boy stand in that line, girl stand in that line, they go in and then they come out. Yeah, it is seriously that simple. And I would assume that people know how to decide which bathroom to go in. And like I said, all toilets are the same. I promise you, they're no different. And so, you know, but again, as a trans man that passes, I have privilege, okay? Now, in my mind, I have anxiety when I go to the restroom. I have anxiety anytime that I'm having to make sure that I pass, but visibly I pass. And passing means that no one's gonna look at me and assume that I'm transgender. Everybody's going to assume, oh, Dylan man, bathroom, good. Fine, but it's not the same for everyone. And so we need to acknowledge that we have to change this conversation. And it's gonna take every single person, especially in Texas, it's gonna take every single Texan. Austin has an equal rights ordinance that protects transgender people. El Paso, San Antonio, Dallas, Fort Worth, there's a lot of, I think that's all the major cities, have it. Houston doesn't. And it was led by misinformation and a religious radicalized group that demonized our community. And it's really, it needs to stop.
Claire, what about you?
The last 15 years of my career with the state, I dealt with the legislature. And as an attorney, I tend to think about laws in more technical senses. Yeah, there's not a law in Texas that tells us what a man is. And nothing in the law tells us what the distinction is that makes one a woman. We divide the entire world into two boxes, but the truth of the matter is that these two boxes don't really fit all of humanity. It's biological, it's genetic, it is the way our bodies are built and our brains are wired. There's a lot of places where it gets very difficult. And when you start trying to figure out why that line is drawn where it is, it gets tough. They keep going back to a very simplistic line. They keep going back to this thing about the sex is shown on a birth certificate. It was placed there by a doctor who, on the basis of a 15-second gross anatomical examination, said, you're going to be this for the rest of your life. There are intersex folks who their external appearance have nothing to do with what their genes are or their reproductive abilities. So when you start trying to put this in law, it gets very, very messy. I think they're starting to get some concept of that, but it's going to get a lot harder when they start actually trying to draft a law which can withstand appellate scrutiny. Where you've actually got to look at the science and see whether you can draw that line there and make sense. The second part of this is that it just makes no sense. At first they tried to demonize us. They tried to paint us as predators, as violent. It was very interesting when our lieutenant governor came in recently and said, it's very apparent that trans folks have been in bathrooms for very many years and it's never caused a problem. But we still need a law. For what? You need a law telling me where to pee because you're afraid that somebody not me is going to do something? Why don't you pass a law relating to them? as if you didn't already have those. It does not make sense, and it's going to cost a whole lot of money. So I'm hoping that ultimately folks will look at this and say, you know, we're spending an awful lot of money and facing an awful lot of sanctions for doing something that helps no one. You know, the most recent national trans survey just came out today, and it's absolutely undeniable that the person who's in danger in the bathroom is us. You know, a significant number of us are terrified to go into the bathroom. We're not afraid of you. We're afraid of somebody coming in and assaulting us. We're afraid of going in there and somebody making a scene. We're afraid of, you know, having someone start screaming at us. You know, we're not the danger. We're the victims.
You know, also, bathrooms are an interesting space to have this fight, because you're right. I mean, there isn't a law saying this is what a man is supposed to be and this is what a woman is supposed to be. But there is, especially in Texas, a lot of mythology about those two gender orientations. And in bathrooms, there's a lot of mythology about what happens in bathrooms and a lot of kind of tropes about what happens in bathrooms. And in Sioux City, Iowa, where my dad grew up, they would do stakeouts in bathrooms. And if you would point your shoes one way, they would arrest you for being gay. And so the bathroom has been a significant space of these battles. And I'm curious, you know, growing up or raising a child and trying to bring to that discussion and explain that to Asher, like, this is the significance of this restroom. And I don't know if any of you read Slavoj Žižek, anyone? But he's a theorist, and he's got this great analysis of toilets and their ideological representation. I'll send it to you in a bit. Yes, but maybe just try to kind of break down. There's a huge history and historical significance about the mythology of the bathroom. How do you just like break it down and explain to Asher, like, this isn't about you, honey?
So for me, I really, trying to think how to say this so it doesn't sound, but I don't necessarily think about Asher as much as I do about Kennedy, because I'm a dad with a daughter who the Texas Capitol is telling me I should be in just terrible fear for anytime she goes into the bathroom. And I'm not. And the reason I'm not is because I understand the statistics of sexual assault. My concern for my kids should be more likely someone she knows than the statistical improbability that she will be attacked in a bathroom by anyone, let alone a transgender individual. It's a solution to a problem that does not exist. And that's how simple it really is for me. In terms of Asher, the other thing that frustrates me about this law, having a transgender son, is he's really just left out of the equation. They don't talk about him. There's like a part of the transgender community that does not exist, because we are hell-bent on terrorizing the world that the transgender female is coming to get your kid. And we don't even talk about Asher's space. And when they did talk about the men's room, they said, well, men can take care of themselves. We don't have to worry about them. That was basically what old Danny Patrick said. I think it was Patrick. Maybe it was Paxton. I get the two confused anymore, because it's basically two heads of the same dragon. So for me as a parent living in both spaces, they're not selling me a law I need. And it's just that simple for me.
And I mean, that's patriarchy. That's misogyny. You know, these battles are always waged around the woman's body. Whether you're a man in a woman's body or a woman in a man's body, it's like whether you're a little girl or you identify as a woman, it's, you know, that's the problem. Carmarian, do you have anything to add about the bathroom bill?
You know, this is not a subject that I care to really like to talk about, because I have to internalize that it's not for me just a bathroom issue. I still deal with the racism of going into the bathroom. Okay, so, you know, it's very simple. Let people go to the restroom that they're comfortable with. or spending all this money and this rhetoric on something that's irrelevant, then spend more money to make public restrooms that are single occupancies that has a lock on the door. It's cheaper to do that. When I think of these levels of conversation, I think about us going back into time, and I'm thirsty, but I can't drink out of that cooler because it's for whites only. So I have to wait my turn, but the black sign that says it's for black people is broken. So I have to now be thirsty until I go to the next remote location that I can drink from. But when the white cooler is broken and they want to get a drink, and I'm not being racist, I'm giving an example. You know, they will use the, you know, the common word that they used to use, move out the way, and they would drink from our fountain that was once said that it was supposed to be cursed to benefit them. So when I think about the bathroom, I think about what I still have to go through just to go into the restroom. Let's talk about classism and race. So, you know, I may not be the best candidate, but to say that I think that all of our bodies was created to release, and that if we're not careful, we're going to just start releasing wherever we want. And that's what I'm sure they're not ready for.
We have time for one more question. Here, come on in.
Hi, I'm Kara. And my question is, what to you makes an effective cisgender ally? And, you know, Carmarian took that in kind of a broad sense, talking about being empathetic and not sympathetic. And Dylan talked about being boots on the ground. So take that as broad or as specific as you'd like. I'd like some specific tools and answers, but answer it however you'd like.
Dylan, you want to start with that?
Yeah, at the front, I think they're still there. Yeah, everybody grab one of these books that's available. And for those of you that are interested in what I'm pointing to, it's talking about transgender people in restrooms. And it's put together by a bunch of people on the bottom. But I think that, is this Equality Texas? Okay, so it's a whole bunch of good people working on stuff through Movement Advancement Project. And so if you're on the podcast, you can look through it. And so one of the first things you can do is self-educate. We live in 2016. This means that we have amazing things, smartphones, computers, Wi-Fi everywhere. Go on the internet and read about trans people's experiences firsthand. This is a good way to bring your families, your loved ones, expose them to transgender stories. It's probably the easiest thing that you could do as far as like specifics. I don't know where, oh, there you are. As far as like specifics, that would be like my number one suggestion for me. And have these conversations. Bring it up to a coworker, you know, like, because you'll never know. You can learn all you want, but you have to exercise your skills. You have to study and practice. Study and practice. It's difficult. It's difficult for me. I'm a transgender person, and I want to make sure that I can have a conversation where I am inclusive of everyone. And in order to do that, I have to study and practice. I have to study intersex rights and learn how to be advocate for my intersex community. I have to study, you know, I have to be able to speak up for a lot of different kinds of people. And if you want to do that with any aspect of person or marginalized community, please study and practice.
Claire?
You know, I do quite a bit of speaking, but the truth of the matter is when I'm speaking, folks hear what I say and they say, well, of course you'd say that, you're trans. You know, I am suspect because, you know, I am one of the other. And so by being a spokesperson, when we're not present, speaking from a position of cis privilege, you are going to have a greater voice than I do. You can speak when we aren't there. You can say, I have a trans friend. You know, you can say, you know, that joke's not funny. You would have hurt my friend if he had been here listening to it. So use your position a privilege to claim us. You know, if you see us standing outside of a bathroom terrified to go in, say, hey, I'll go in with you. We're stronger together. There are lots of places where, you know, your voices will go that mine don't. There's still a significant number of people who've never met somebody who's trans. And it probably doesn't occur to you to very often to walk up to them and going, hey, I met somebody who's trans. Do you know anybody like that? But the truth of the matter is, you're likely to spark questions. What was it like? Were you afraid? You know, did they look funny? So you're going to get some weird questions, but yes, claim us, own us, and be a part of our community. That's probably the most effective thing I can think of.
Ken, you want to add?
I think, of course, my view is, as an ally, as an ally parent, treat my boy as you would treat me. You take me at face value. I sit up here and I tell you I'm a man, and you just go with it. You don't ask proof. You don't ask to see my driver's license or birth certificate or any of that. I say I'm Kim Ballard and I'm a Texas male. And you accept it and accept my son in the same way. And I think as a parent, to be an effective ally for my kid, now that I know I have a boy, I treat him like a boy. I give him crap about if he didn't have his deodorant on. You know, just things that you do with a son. I bust his chops constantly, probably to the point I'll make a therapist quite wealthy someday. I kid. No, I tried to. It was a rewiring for me. I spent 12 years with what I thought I had in two daughters, and I had to learn to be a dad of a boy, and to be an effective ally. I started finding out boy things. I mean, you would think it'd be natural since I am a boy, but I didn't raise a boy, and I had three sisters, and I have two girl dogs, and I had a girl snake, and then hey, you have a son. So it was a total rewiring of the parental brain, but along the way, I think even when I slipped or made mistakes or she instead of he, I think at the end of the day, asked her. Kids are good readers, and he knows the difference. He can tell the difference when someone makes a mistake versus when they're just not supporting. And he has vocalized as much. So when you're around a transgender friend, family member, or stranger, be real. Be real. Kindness is something that can be shown without understanding. You don't have to understand to show the person next to you kindness. You want to be an ally? Show them kindness.
That's powerful. Carmarian, any words of advice?
Rebecca.
Yes,
no, okay, no, just so they've given you the tools. You know, they mentioned about being educating yourself. Great analogy, Dylan. You know, just modern technology is there. And Claire started with, you know, speak up for our community. You know, claim us. Because we have individuals and family and sectors that are not claiming us, and we want to feel belong as well. I spoke about earlier, you know, make empathy feel that you've adopted and you've made ownership of it, so it won't come across sympathetic to our community. But I want to leave with the advice, because you know me by now. Just want to leave you with the powerful advice. And that advice that I wanted to share with you, and some may get it and some may not, and it's not to be offensive, but this is to challenge you so you can evaluate if you're going to be able to sign up to be this active ally that we actually need. And that's knowing and checking your privilege at the front door before doing the work.
And, you know, when when Ken said, I've got two cats that are female, two dogs that are female, I made a joke with Dylan. I said, that you know of. But I think that, like, what's important is that, especially when you're talking about jokes and what you're laughing at and what you're not laughing at, you may be talking to a trans person who's not out. You might be having a conversation with someone who's been closeted or who's thinking about coming out. And by you standing up for trans people or for anyone, really, you are also standing up for the person that you're talking to and for yourself. So I think it is really important that you just do that, because that's, you know, who you are as an individual. And before we leave tonight, Dylan brought up something. We're metaphorically at war, perhaps. And I remember listening to a conversation, which I talk about a lot, and it was Susan Sontag was talking about putting on Waiting for Godot in Sarajevo during wartime. And she recounted this conversation that the theater director was having with a journalist, and the journalist asked the theater director, there are snipers on the roof, and you're bombed every single day. Why would you ever put on a play in the middle of a war zone? And he said, you know, during war, people think that the most important thing is to survive, but it's actually to remain human in each moment. And so I want to close by just asking each of you, you know, I think we are metaphorically, if not, you know, really at war and at risk. And there's been a lot of really harsh rhetoric and a lot of bigotry, misogyny, racism in the media and in our political dialogue. How are you remaining human in each moment, and how do you recommend that we all can remain human as well?
So it can be really difficult. My own personal experience, when you hear people hating you and your friends and your family, these people up here, they're my family. And when I hear people blatantly hating them and hating me for existing, for even having to think that we exist, for having to think that I have a house and that I have a partner that loves me and that I have a family that loves me, and that I don't deserve those things, it makes me mad, and it makes me want to see change before I die. And so, you know what I do? I wake up in the morning, and I make breakfast for me and my partner, and I feed our two cats, and I feed my blind dog, and I go to work, and then I come home, and I cook dinner, and repeat, and that's what I do. I live my life. I call my mom. I call my dad. I talk to my sister. I make sure that my family knows that I'm not going to disappear. And I want to make sure that my family here doesn't disappear. And I need y'all to make sure that we don't disappear. Because when we are erased from text, from the history books, just like Claire was saying, she didn't have role models because they just weren't there. And so for us to survive, we need to make sure that you are doing your job and you are giving us life through conversation, through text, acknowledging our existence. Acknowledge my existence. Every one of you are allowed to say that you know me personally. My favorite color is orange. I drive a Honda Civic, and I live in Houston, okay? And I like all kinds of music. There you go. Okay, I'll accept your friend request. Anybody else wants to meet, please do. And so just, I'm as human as every one of you. I have likes and dislikes. I dream. I second guess my career moves, and I think that I want to, you know, run away and be an astronaut or something, and then I wake up and I go and paint someone's house. You know, we have to support each other, and we have to love one another, because that's what we're here to do. And that's the only thing. That is one of the only things that helps me every day remain civil, because it's so hard. It makes me cry when I see the things that are said, when I see the ads that are put on TV, because it's so hurtful and it's so personal. It's not a blanket statement. It's not saying I don't like, you know, Kanye fans or something like that. This is saying I don't like someone because of who they are, because of who they were created to be. And just the fact that y'all came here, it helps me and helps someone else.
I think my advice would be to love deeply and fight hard. Don't forget self-care. There was this election thing that happened recently. What? And the next day, my wife and I were in pretty bad shape. We got out of bed, but we didn't turn the lights on. Instead, we made coffee, left the lights off all day, and starting with The Princess Bride, we binge-watched romantic comedies. We may have also drunk heavily. I fight because it's the only way I have to relieve the stress. If I'm here talking, I'm striking back. You know, if I'm going to the legislature and standing around for 6 hours to be allowed to speak for 3 minutes, I'm doing something to fight back. I do it because I love my family. And I listen to the stories of those that I'm there to represent. they energize me. They give me passion. They make me feel fully alive. And feeling is what a lot of my transition was about. I was dead inside for so long. And now I feel deeply. I cry easily. And I show my tears, which was unheard of back in the day. But it's got to be balanced. You have to love yourself. You have to love your friends, your family. And you've got to stand up to the ones who are trying to harm them. Rinse, wash, repeat.
I had to double check that because at work my nickname is Sheldon Cooper. Activism keeps me human. It reminds me that there's a lot of people that need help. There's a lot of people that won't speak for themselves out of either fear or whatever the case you were going to interject.
I was going to say, put your mic a little closer.
Oh, we're getting echo. Okay. Activism is what keeps me human. My id is that I'm quite fine being in my cube all day, working on my computer, going home, as she said, rinse, repeat, go back next day. But I have the uniqueness of living in a house where I'm spectator to it all, but when you get a diagnosis of MS or you have a kid that's transgender, your house now has MS. Your house is now transgender. It is a family issue. It is not an individual thing. And a poem that I read over and over all the time is by, and I'll mess up his name, it was a German man in the mid-40s named Niemöller. And he wrote, and this was sometime after World War II, first they came for the socialists, I did not speak out because I was not socialist. They came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. They came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. And then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me.
We have to keep speaking. For Astra, and I'm horrible with names. For Camarian, for Claire, for Dylan, for the parents, Ken, Melissa, we have to speak, and we have to never cease, because it just ramped up, the war that is.
That's so funny. That's such a famous poem, and I also don't know the name of the author. It's so good. Carmarian, you want to?
Yeah, absolutely. Close? So the question is how do I stay human? I am human. I'm motivated through this process of being created human, and that's what I want to speak about. When I think about this movement, and some may call it a war, I call it us being captive. I think of my own culture and our role model, Martin Luther King, that Martin Luther King had a way of what we use theologians as a prophetic voice of speaking things in the atmosphere and believing that A, I will be in the place when it happens, or B, I will not be in the place, but I know it's going to happen. And that's what motivates me is that to be a voice. And maybe I will be here to see the change, but maybe I won't, but I know it will change. Because I was created human, my motivation is to just speak and find some level of peace and to be hopeful that where we have derived to now, that it will actually get better, because there have been some good things. Some doors have opened up for us that are trans-identified and that's living our truth. And for those that's living vicariously through us, things have happened. But, you know, because in light of recent events, you know, some of us are scared and shaky. So how do I stay sane? And so just like he reads his poems, you know, I have to read the scripture. So this is my favorite scripture. I remember when I read this, it really was speaking about various communities, but yet alone captive people. And as I stated, because there are doors that are still yet to be opened for our community, I just be prophetic to speak a voice, and hopefully that I will remain to see those doors open. And if not, my faith lets me know that it will happen. It happened back for slavery. It happened after Martin Luther King passed away, and I believe that it will happen for the future if I'm here or not. And it just simply says, and I'm going to paraphrase a little bit just for the content, but I am assured that the king of Egypt, so politics and those individuals that feel that they have ruler over you or that are responsible for you or the majority, will not let you go, and they will not let you go with a mighty hand. So I will stretch out my hand, and for those that have faith or whatnot, you know, this is supernatural. You know, if I am fearful of being trans and I don't know who to talk to, you know, it's not imaginary. I'm going to believe in something to empower me. But I'm going to stretch forth my hand with all my might. Which I will do in the mist. And that's what's important about this. The mist is that sometime when it was misty earlier today or yesterday or whatnot, no one wanted to leave the house. Sometimes that's where the greater work is done, when people are scattered, because just a little mist at that particular time can confuse the things. You know, I'm from Dallas, so I'm used to cold. People here are not used to cold. So I was out and I was in no traffic and I was fine. But that's what happens when we're in the mist. And I think that the mist is being created for a reason. But the hand is going to be stretched in the mist. And it says, after that, I will let you go. And this is what encourages me is that when we are to the place where we have full inclusion and equality has set in for the trans community, it says that I will give this people favor in the sight of their adversaries. And it shall be when you go out, you shall not go out empty-handed. And so everything that we're speaking about today, that when we are free of all of the discrimination and the segregation, that we are really going to come out on top, and we are not going to come out empty-handed. We're going to come out with stories that's going to allow the next generation to have history behind the hard work that we have done to be visible and to be bold. And on top of that, because we were good stewards and because we were faithful and because we withstand the test of time and we still show up and we still talk and we still cry, and this still is a sacrifice, the scripture goes on and say, not only are we going to come out empty-handed, but that blessing is going to get transferred to the next generation and the next generation and the next generation. And so my encouragement for myself and to you is that I was created human, but I'm motivated that there will be a change. And when that change comes, I'm celebrating now that even though I may not be able to be a witness now, but my son and my grandson and my great-grandchildren will be able to reap the benefit of the hard work that I've started. Finally, best is the end of a thing than there is there the beginning. And basically, I celebrate the end because anytime there's an end, there's always a beginning. And because we may be in war captive, and maybe because the wrong person may be in the White House, whatever the case may be, we are protected by our truth, and we're protected by our love. We're protected because even when we don't have a voice, you're right there to have a voice for us. So unity will stand, and I think that the greatest thing is unity and love.
Thank you. Well, I think we've come to the end of our session, and I know, Jared, you might want to say a couple words, but I just wanted to thank you for inviting me to moderate this discussion and hold this space. Thank you very much, and thank you to the Anti-Defamation League and to Equality Texas. And a very big thank you to Dylan and Claire and Ken and Carmarian for sharing your time and your stories with us this evening. We really appreciate it. And also, thank you all for coming out tonight. It was really a wonderful evening. Did you want to close with something? Okay, well, have a beautiful night and drive safe. Thank you.